Well, the stars have aligned to know it's not that eclipse yet, but it seems like we have Easter, Dingus Day, April Fool's Day all rolled into one.
Celebrating so, all things that have risen.
Yeah.
Cakes, pastries, Cialis, you know.
Gingerbread, Ginger Dead Man 2, The Passion of the Crust. But I'm thinking we need to get a GoFundMe going because we got to get Greg to play in every country in the world.
That's right.
Now, that might be tough in Eritrea and North Korea. And he might not come back, so we'll try to book those later.
Well, the countries that I'm allowed back in.
Yeah, but we really, you know, it's tough on Easter to have guests. I think we've taped before. Maybe we've had guests. Maybe we've not. But all we had to do was remember to wear wires on Wednesday. We could have just taped broadcast that show.
What?
But this is, we've actually made our first radio appearance on John Adams' show on 106.3 Rochester Free Radio.
That was fun.
Any thoughts on that, Greg?
I enjoyed it and got to meet Dan Zaya, an accomplished guitarist.
Who probably will be on soon.
And I forget the main guy's name. Kevin, yeah. And he was a music therapist and very interesting guy. I mean, very philosophical. And we had a nice chat, you and I and him, outside. Just about different philosophies of music and healing, and that was the basic theme of that show. But it was really, really cool, and a lot of smart people, you know.
And you.
And me.
But I still think I'm going to just not be, I'll be in my humble opinion, I do think my best line was the one, well, John Adams, a good friend, hosts it. It's mostly about business, and this sort of was because Kevin has a business, but come on, we had musicians and us. We were lucky we didn't talk about how to inflate Zeppelins or something, but the best line I had, I thought John's saying, you know, and then there's the saying, I'm trying to do a John Adams voice, sound all stoic and manly. And then there's that saying, nothing should be done unless it could be done poorly, and I'm almost out. What about skydiving?
I know, I almost lost it.
Yeah,
when you said
Greg's
that.
Like my, he's laughing.
I died. I love that. That was so funny. Because I just trying to, so yeah, the only thing you probably don't get a second chance. Yeah.
I remember I did it once, like in Batavia.
Oh, yeah?
I remember, and they take you out. The worst part is, never again, I don't recommend it. I just had that fear. And then when you have that fear that thing's not going to pull,
yeah.
And there's, and you have to walk out like by the wing of the plane and then let go.
What happens if you have a heart attack on the way down? What happens?
You probably won't feel hitting the ground at least. I mean, I never thought of that.
Must pull ripcord.
They don't do that though for you because like they hook you up to the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking this is going to be like the one time, and there's that moment of fear where you should wear a diaper because you jump and it seems like any It seems like an eternity before that thing goes. Then you.
There's other times you should wear a diaper.
Okay. My ears here.
Oh no, you got your ears around your head.
That's all I need. I go for walks. If she'll walk around dressed like I am now, it'll take me away and everything.
So what's this up with this book you've got? You got this really cool book.
I jumped ahead in this one. But this is our little, we actually have the prompt today.
Oh, I'm
today.
Sorry.
No, you didn't, I mean, well, it's random what we talk about. But you know, if you're a comic book fan, all those things you could order from, let me guess, you didn't get what you actually ordered in theory. I mean, a little bit, but it was very different. Only thing I will say, well, not as from Abracadabra Magic, the smoke bombs were good from Abracadabra Magic. But otherwise,
pepper gum,
if you thought you were going to... If you thought you ever were going to get that 6-foot nuclear sub that I had planned on driving around in the canal, you got a piece of cardboard. I finally found that out because we sent away for one, and I guess they must have fled the country.
Comes with 10 pounds of baking soda, right?
They must have fled the country because it came big. Oh, I got a hovercraft. Hovercraft was like, it said you could ride it. It was like this big. My hands are about big of a mini pie.
Pepper gum, x-ray specs.
But here, why don't we... I had the one open for you just with the thing with the kryptonite there.
That was hilarious, yeah.
And you could go right to with the bookmarks in there.
Yeah, kryptonite rocks. We imagined a comic book prop come to life that, according to the ad, we are to possess as safekeeping so as to protect Superman and demonstrate our great friendship. They sent a real rock covered in glow-in-the-dark green paint. Love it. Oh, I like that, the comparisons. X-ray specs.
I got those. I ordered those. Yeah, of course, what do? The young boys reading comics? What do you think they'd show them looking at?
That's so pretty funny. So, yeah, there was an actual, I don't know if you remember this.
I got this.
What's that? Hypno coin.
It looks cool. I mean, I will say that. At least it looked cool. It looked like this a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the little Twilight Zone thing.
I wish I had these glasses. Hypno specs. That'd be cool.
You could hypnotize the audience when you're playing. It's like, now you will stand on the head.
But there was, I don't know if you remember, but there was a spud gun.
I've seen
a gun that shoots pieces of potato. You know, that's kind of funny because I went to this gig once, and it was out in a rural gig, right? So you can only imagine what they're doing for fun. They had a potato launcher, and I'm not lying. They had a thing. They made it out of PVC pipe, and it had like a dual chamber thing, and they stuck a potato in it, and they sprayed lighter fluid inside the bottom of it and lit it, and this potato went shooting over roofs of houses. I couldn't believe it. I laughed my ass off. I'm like, boy, you guys are really bored to sell out here. But there was a Leave It to Beaver episode. I don't know if you remember. They sent away for a movie projector. And they got this. It came. They got all excited. They were going to have parties and show movies. And it showed up, and it was this little, like, you know, 6-inch stupid little toy thing.
I'm lucky. I guess I didn't waste my paperboy money because I had these dreams. This was more. There were other, besides comic books, there was the Johnston Smith catalog and Abracadabra Magic. And I was good. They had all the little films, the reels of horror films. We were thinking, my friend Todd Anthony and I, of let's convert the garage into a theater, charge like a buck, have everything. Todd was like ahead of his time. He's like, well, if anybody throws up, we'll have buckets because they were horror movies. We never ordered it, though, and I can imagine probably be that little, you know, where the reels were probably like 10 minutes.
This is pretty funny. Bag full of laughs. Reminds me of that thing at the Batman movie, at the end of the first Michael Keaton Batman movie. Pretty interesting.
The chick incubator. One of the bad ones, I guess, which is true, were the spider monkeys.
Oh, God.
Because I read about that. Okay, it was like 1999. That was a lot of money. They really sent them, though.
Spider monkeys.
And a lot of people got hurt because of them, because these little darlings.
Were they real?
Yeah, they would send you real monkeys.
Wow.
And realize little cute monkeys, they can rip your face off pretty much.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
And remember the one for, there were like chickens that laid colored eggs, like all kinds of different Easter colored eggs?
No.
I've seen that. You know, I tried to convince my mom to get them, and she just won. She's like, where are you going to keep them? We did have relatives who lived in Avon on a farm. But I could imagine, like, my Uncle Bill, and his name was Bill Clinton. And back in the day, he's like, a lot of people have nothing to do because they somehow found his number. And they would call and leave messages like, is Al Gore around? And, you know, put up with that. But I could see him. I'd be going over to see my chickens.
Can you solve world peace? You
know? What are you having for? What are you? Oh, we're going to have fried chicken for dinner. Oh, well, where did they go? Oh, they ran away. I could see him do that. Did you ever send away for any of this stuff?
No. Well, I might have, and I think I got a letter back saying that the place was no longer
in existence. So that's with the sub. That was with the sub.
It was like a quarter wasted, you know, if I remember.
I did. This was from a comic book. It was from Johnson Smith Company, which is basically a big comic book catalog and stuff. A UFO. And I had my plans. I'm talking about it in school, about flying around. So I get it. It's this big bed sheet with little light stickers stamped on it. And it said to, like, start a fire and blow it up.
Wow.
And go flying.
Well, you know, then you start thinking about, well, truth in advertising and all these rules that probably started from stuff like that where they can't misrepresent. And, I don't know. It's just no fun to have a business anymore. You can't bullshit people and you can't, like, misrepresent yourself.
That would actually be a good idea, though, about how much could they go within the letter of the law.
Right.
You know, what they're promising. And it's not like the movie Used Cars with the hanging judge, played by Al Lewis.
Yep.
Well, I have a mile of cars. And you have to show you have a mile of cars. The license plate pops out just to get it over.
I know. Well, they can say certain things and still be, I guess, you know, legit. Well, we said, you know, not actual size. You know, like all that kind of stuff where they put little disclaimers now, you know, about all that stuff.
the little at the very bottom or whatever. Well, that's like John Kenneth Galbraith wrote this book around 1955 where he basically said, you know, a lot of consumerism in America, they're getting you to buy stuff you don't need.
Yep. Yep. Future garage sale items.
Pepsi, stuff like that.
Yeah. I remember listening to some old radio shows, and they had a Roy Rogers thing where you could belong to the Roy Rogers fan club. And you got a membership card, a button, I don't know, and some other couple of other things for a dime. You send a dime in, and it's pretty funny, man. I mean, how times have changed.
I just think of the thing from A Christmas Carol, though, from Little Orphan Annie.
Yeah.
A commercial? Son of a bitch. Be sure to eat your Ovaltine.
Right.
But a part of it, too, I guess when you're a kid, it's not like today you order something and it'll show up in 3 days. Seemed like it took like a couple months. And just for like being a kid, you took all that time fantasizing about how awesome it was going to be.
Right,
that
right.
part was kind of fun until it actually showed up.
I mean, it was kind of fun to get the little dumb things in the cereal boxes. And then I remember, like, you know, digging around for it and, like, dumping the whole cereal box to get the stupid little ring or something.
We've all done probably this. I mean, a lot of people do the thing where you just wait to your parents. I know, open it, dump it in a bowl.
Yeah.
But I would do the ones a couple times when I just was lazy. I turn it over, cut the bottom, get the thing, put it back on the shelf, and then hit my mom screaming at me because it went all over the floor.
I had a Bazooka Joe ring. I joined the Bazooka Joe Club from the bubble gum. I wish I still had that ring. It was pretty cool.
But I was wondering, too, we're just going around a little. Do you ever have stuff thrown at you on stage? Not a spud gun, I hope.
No spud guns. You know, I never really experienced that.
There was the one song New Math did. I had this footage of it I've seen where they did the song Money, and people were throwing money at them.
Well, there you go. That's all right.
Yeah, but Keith Moon, I think somebody threw a cabbage at Keith Moon.
Well, that's why I never wrote a song called Bricks.
Well, that was like they said, like I think Ringo or Keith said you could put your cymbals up to,
yeah.
If you were a drummer, like if you were a singer, you were just unlucky.
Well, there's a story, but I guess in the Philippines, because that whole thing, because the trip to the Philippines was a kind of a disaster. Ringo put his cymbals up like at a 90-degree angle because he thought he might deflect bullets or something. He thought he was going to get shot at.
And then there was the other famous story about it was John and George, I think, who said they like Jelly Babies, all us Doctor Who fans.
Right.
Familiar with that. I actually bought a TARDIS shape box, but jelly beans, basically. And
right.
Fans got wind of it. So, unfortunately, a little overzealous, they were getting pelted by jelly beans during shows.
I remember that, yeah.
It's like, imagine if they said, well, we like anvils.
That's right. Clang!
No, we like Wolverines or something, or like people putting those on stage or pop.
Throw us your badgers!
That's one thing I found, like, with Pete Townsend, and you gotta say whatever you want to say about Pete, and I think he's a genius songwriter. I think he's an underrated guitar player, the way he does it, but he's not somebody who does canned interviews.
No.
And he always, I guess his recent one was, well, I'm only touring because I need the money because I lead an extravagant lifestyle.
Yep, I just read that, yeah.
I posted out. But then before, now I heard, like, and everybody realizes, they even admitted that farewell term was a scam because Pete was broke and he needed the money. They guaranteed him like $2 million. And they're actually going to do another album after that, but things fell through for a while. And I know Roger had a lot of problems with Kenny Jones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I read Kenny Jones's book, which is actually, in terms of like Roger's book and his is a lot better. There's a lot more meat about playing with the Faces.
Well,
and,
you know, I mean, let's face it, after Keith Moon, it's pretty tough to just
quit,
go with
baby.
A meat and potatoes 2-4 guy, you know?
No, and I guess Roger just didn't like him. And a lot of it came about percentage of, like, royalties and stuff, too. But I think, like, that, you know, I might be wrong, but I think, like, when Ron Wood joined the Stones, and, I mean, there were a couple probably better guitar players, and Woody's great, but on Black and Blue, but he happened to be Keith Pell, so, I mean, more people played on Black and Blue.
I like Black and Blue.
Well, I mean, love it.
It's more of us like a jam thing, but I like it. It's very hypnotic grooves.
And there's, like, always this, you know, they really got into funk, reggae, all this stuff. And I really like it. I've said this many times.
Hot stuff.
Hot stuff. But Hand of Fate's like the most underrated song in a lot of these. But it's cool because like on the El Mocambo stuff, they play it.
Oh, yeah?
Live. And I used to hear it on CMF like decades ago all the time, but people seem to forget that song. It's like the great lost.
I'm not sure I even never heard
it's
it.
It's got a really great guitar. I'll send it to you on Messenger.
Yeah,
later.
Please do.
Yeah, you've heard it. Well, they used to play. I don't know why they don't play it more. It's just really good. But I actually just watched The Stones and Brian Jones, that new movie.
Oh, yeah?
And I guess some of Greg Prevost stuff is in the background.
Oh, wow.
I actually didn't hear it. I was too busy multitasking. But it's got out of the whole. The interesting thing about Brian Jones was he would get more fan mail than everybody combined. But he would actually write back to people. They had people, they had things about, like, messages he wrote to fans.
Wow. It's a shame, you know, how the music business, how people get, you know, bands and people get kind of screwed over or left behind, or it was basically his band, and then, you know, Keith and Mick take over, and then, like, the thing with the Grand Funk with Mark Farner getting forced out. I mean, it just seems like it shouldn't be allowed. I mean, if you're the main guy, I don't know, it just seems like a cruel.
Well, and Bill Wyman's Stone Alone, I wonder if he retired. Because he said he just didn't really like the music anymore or anything.
Yeah.
He left. He wrote it then. I wonder if sort of like he would have written it if he was staying in the band. But he really sort of goes about how Mick and Keith pushed Brian out. But Brian was a bit of a mess, too, so he couldn't really.
Well, I think that when the style started changing and the psychedelia stuff started going away, I mean, there wasn't, because Brian brought a lot of weird things to their songs, the marimba and the Eastern modes and all that stuff, and it was like kind of cool, you know. But then I think they wanted to get more nuts and bolts, and then
He was sort of ticked at them because they were doing more, started like going off into some pop songs and stuff, and he wanted to remain a hardcore blues band,
right? Yeah,
I actually have his album, the pipes of the ones with the Moroccan pipes and everything.
Oh yeah. Which one's that?
It's like Brian Jones presents the pipes of something, and I can't remember the rest of it. That's for all of you to look stuff up in here. We make it up as we go along.
That's right.
And if you want to hear Moroccan music, but one of the funniest things is for like the video for Ruby Tuesday, they're all playing different instruments than they usually play.
Oh, wow. That's
like
a cool
Keith
idea.
Is playing, like when Mick says, when the sun is bright, Keith is playing piano, he looks up. Charlie, he plays drums.
I have an album of zither music. I found that. That's pretty cool, actually, if you like zither music. And I have one called Scottish. It's like Scottish music, Scottish anthems or something, and it's pretty wild stuff.
That's interesting about that, because that's one of the things we were talking a little about, the variety of music on the radio show, and especially during the great 2020, I started like just getting all through all this world music and everything, and I think it's never ending to that point. That's one of the things about music, you know, that there's always something out there. It's not, though. I was saying.
Some music's really out there.
Yeah, very out there. But, like, and I think maybe when you're younger sometimes, unless you're some virtuoso, it's like if you read Ulysses by James Joyce, you don't want to read it, like, until you're over 30 and you've read a lot, or you're doomed, basically.
Yeah, I never attempted that one. But
it took me 3 weeks. It's basically the Odyssey, you know, Irish way in terms of writing and complexity.
Uh-huh.
It's one day, basically, in Leo Bloom's life, June 16th, 1904, and he's just trying to get to the day, but he's copying the Odyssey. But some of that stuff is 800-plus pages, word puzzles.
Wow.
And it took me 3 weeks, and one of my friends and I, we had like sort of a thing, okay, we'll both read this. So she gets back to me, they're still eating breakfast on page. And she quit.
I remember we had to read a lot of books in the summer in high school. We had to read The Citadel and, like, a lot of classics, which was good. I mean, you know, I would have never been exposed to those things without it.
We had one called Pigman.
Pigman.
It's a Pigman. And I remember, like, somebody, like, in class, oh, you know, Pigman died. Sorry to spoil it.
Uh-huh.
But I would never do my summer reading because I always would. Then I would just, like, fake my way through the test. And I was getting great.
I think they only tested us once. They always said they were going to, and they only did it once.
The other thing I found out, like, for some upperclassmen, though, too, was, it's like, I don't worry about it. They'll tell you, oh, it's going to thoroughly affect your grade.
Yeah. Cliff notes don't count, guys.
Yeah. Oh, and I have it. I just stumbled upon it yesterday. I have this gargantuan dictionary. My parents had it. It was huge. But it used to have summaries of all these books in the back.
Oh, nice.
And that got me through a lot of, because I remember All Quiet on the Western Front. My friends and I watched the movie. And I remember it had John Boy Walton in the one we saw. And then I read that. I got like a 90. Oh, like a 95.
Wow.
Tons of people failed. And the worst part was, you know, how people are in high school, got narked on. They're like, well, you guys watched the movie.
Yeah, sons of bitches.
And like, well, she's like, did you read the book? You did very well. Yes, no. You know, I think more those days I would have just gotten away with more if I tried.
Yeah.
But it
reading is great. I mean, you know, it's I think one good thing with the internet is at least people are perusing news articles, and I mean, it doesn't really matter if you're holding a book in your hand, although it's nice to have that tactile feeling and all that, but as long as you're reading and getting information, I mean, it doesn't really matter how you get it.
And still, I can't do audiobooks, though, and I've heard, like, a lot of people who travel like them.
I'm not crazy about them.
Maybe, you know, my eyesight goes, I'm all feeble 5 years from now.
You ever put descriptive audio on a TV show or a movie?
Sometimes it's very strange. Sometimes
it
just won't, like some of the stuff I watch online, you get it whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
But some of the best, I still love, with, you know, the best dubbings are Godzilla movies where it has nothing to do with.
Right. Well, it's funny. I bought this Iron Man animated, and it's done by this Japanese studio,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if you read the subtitles and then go and then try to put it against the dialogue, it's not always the same. There's words left out, and, you know, it's like the literal translation versus the script, there's two different things, and it's kind of interesting, the apples and oranges.
Well,
you know?
It got me when I first time I put it on, was, wait a second, this is all in Japanese.
Me too. That was weird, and I finally found the English one.
Some of those Godzillas, which are great, I think they're tough to get now, the Toho collections. But, like, especially, like, Godzilla Raids Again, the Fire Monster, which, again, is the Fire Monster. Trying to get, like, because they have the Japanese version and the U.S. version.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes, man, getting the subtitles on these things is a little rough.
Yeah.
Those are good collections, though, because they give you the Japanese versions, too, so there's no Raymond Burr.
Right, yeah.
The immortal Nick Adams.
I know. It's like you wonder how they got these guys involved.
Well, Nick Adams was, I think, in more than one of those. And it's one of my all-time favorites because it was one of the first ones I saw was Monster Zero,
yep.
Which is Attack of Astro Monster, the real title. But I think it had everything. It had Rodan. It had...
Sorry.
Greg is looking for Easter eggs. Because then I remember, but then there was like a lot of those. I wonder about this Godzilla and Kong, the New Empire movie. It looks like almost the end of the Showa era with all like the more sort of lighter comic booky ones.
I think my girlfriend and her son are going today, and he said it's stupid, but he wants to see it anyway. So,
you know what I mean? I'm looking at it, and it's one of those things where, okay, Godzilla Minus One, great.
It was very
hardcore,
good.
Though.
Yeah.
And they won't, it's not released on video because they have an agreement with the U.S. and they're getting paid a lot of money. They have to wait till this movie shows and everything. It's almost like how the Beatles didn't want Paul to put his solo album out first.
Right. But, yeah, well, you know, non-compete clause.
But isn't that about Godzilla, how diverse you can make him? How he's like this nasty force of nature, then he's this... I mean, the sight of him and Kong running, though, is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I think Shimo, I've seen, like, he's in the Kaijuverse, but I don't know if he's popped up in an animated thing or anything.
Well, they both have different motivations. I mean, Kong is a little more, you know, being more of an anthropoid or more human. And, you know, Godzilla is just an amphibian and more of a reptile. So it's like they have two different sets of... motivations and instincts, you know.
Godzilla's got feelings too, man.
Oh yeah, right. I know. It's hard to breathe fire.
He's a sensitive dude.
He is.
And I guess the way
he gets hot from time to time.
I guess the rationale of the movies is, too, like when he's the more of the nice guy. And there's the one, I think it's versus Gigan, if you watch the American version. So he's with Anguirus. And they talk.
Yeah.
He's like, they do. It's a guzzle. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, what about the one where they got the little ones, the little babies ones?
Those little Manila there.
Those are strange, man.
But I remember, like, when I was a kid, I didn't know it was a guy in a suit. Because I know in comic books they would have monsters like that. What they would do is show, like, he was a big robot and there's a guy controlling him.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be a great job.
Yeah, really. That reminds me of that Superman episode, The Runaway Robot. That was, like, one of the weirder first season ones.
And I guess, you know, War of the Gargantuas, which I'm holding out for, there's, like, a pack of it with Rodan, but it's very expensive. And I'm just waiting. Hoping.
Yeah, stuff is starting to get really out there. Like, there's a new Deep Purple box set. I mean, some of these things, you know, they're $75 for that. I mean, I'm just not going to do that, you know?
Well, like that box set I have, I got it for, like, under 30. I've looked just to be curious.
Yeah. I just saw something. I forgot which one it was. What's that?
It's being weird today.
Oh, okay. Andy's venturing out. Andy's venturing back in.
But I looked, so I managed to pick that up for under $30. So I looked online. Cheapest one you could get now is $120.
Wow.
Did you see the nuts. New video for Smoke on the Water? They did a new video with AI.
I've been reading about it.
They had Richie with his little, little Puritan cap on.
No. I have to check that out. Boy.
I'll send that to you with...
Please do. I don't have time sometimes to check out some of these things.
Well, it's Easter. We have to be looking for eggs and everything.
That's right.
But I'm wondering about that, too. And that's like something you said. It's got me now a little bit, too, about bands. What is a band, ultimately? It's like, is it the bunch of people form a band? You lose some people. My phone goes off. Now, is it the sum of the people? Or has it become almost like an entity on itself? Where people take it over and, like, run it?
Well,
but think of it another way. Like, suppose, like, you know, John said he was going to leave the Beatles, like, in September 28th, 1969, and they kept it quiet. Now, suppose, and George, would you know, George wanted to do at the end of 68, he said, why don't we take a break, like, 6 months to a year, do solo stuff. This is getting... Paul claims that, well, I'm a workaholic. I couldn't see us stopping.
Right.
But suppose they did, like, John quit. Paul's like, well, I'm not quitting. Like, Ringo, you want to stay on? Maybe George will come back. And then maybe now you might have, like, four different guys being the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts to that. I mean, you got the songwriting thing versus being a band member. And that causes a lot of problems because the songwriters make more money. But because of the musicians, they make the song. So you sort of, you know, could you just have anybody play on it? Probably, but the thing is, the sum of the parts makes the whole. I mean, you've got, the sound of a band is the contributions of everybody. I mean, you get an initial idea, great, and you got the lyrics and you got a melody, but then people start, oh, let's try this, let's stop here, let's do that, add this instrument here. So, I mean, it's really hard to say, but, you know, unfortunately, arranging doesn't make you much money. So,
well, I guess like with The Who, they decided they wanted Pete to write everything, so they were fine with it.
Right.
You know, so he would get more money. But I know, like, a band like Rush, what they said, those guys actually seem to be one of the few, they actually are friends and liked each other.
Right.
And Neil wrote all the lyrics, but they were all saying, hey, we all contribute, so we're going to split everything.
Yeah, some bands are smart like that. Van Halen did that for a while.
At first, but then
yeah,
Eddie got sick of, like, Michael Anthony claiming he didn't contribute anything.
Right, which I can kind of believe.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he's a good bass player, though.
Yeah, but his parts were always very relegated to, like, just supporting, you know.
Yeah, but he liked something Eddie said that was sort of...
But his singing was off the hook.
It was True and False, where Eddie said, I had to show him how to play everything. Yeah, Eddie did, because Eddie didn't write music. But I can imagine, too, because there's always, like, that line about, well, can you imagine it's like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in practice? Pippen had to tell Jordan to slow down. Because, like, I think, you know, Michael's probably he's the best basketball player ever. So can you imagine trying to keep up with Eddie Van Halen? He starts slow.
Right.
Then, like, huh?
Well, and that, you know, it's funny. With Van Halen especially, I've always thought, with some of the weird stuff that he came up with, you know, riff-wise, imagine trying to be David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar, you know, trying to put melodies and lyrics to these crazy riffs, you know? I mean, that was a big challenge.
I read, like, a book of interviews with Eddie, and Eddie thought, like, Roth, he said Roth is a really smart guy, but he can't connect the dots. But sometimes Roth, like, 10 minutes before they were going to record a song, he'd get a brown bag with a pen, and he'd write the lyrics out of 10 minutes before starting.
Oh, yeah, he's super creative and out there. I mean, he's a separate case.
where Eddie said, like, Sammy... he was very limited lyrically. Like, it would just be like, I think Roth said about him, he writes like his little love songs and stuff.
Girls, cars, and what else?
Remember the one which was Dick in the Dirt? I have a good friend named Richard.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. But that's the thing, too. And Eddie was like, you're working with the guy here who's probably on another planet, basically.
Right. Well, like I said, it's a challenge, but somehow they pulled it together. Now, the Van Halen, the Sammy Van Halen, is a much different lyrically and much more commercial sounding to me. But
they became a pop band, basically.
More or less, yeah.
But I wonder, like, I've never seen a Van Halen tribute band. And I just wonder how those guys playing guitar must really love doing that.
Oh, they're out there. I have a David Lee Roth live thing from Connecticut from, like, 2002 or something. It was a bootleg or something. I mean, it's a good recording and everything, but... And I bought it at this import place. And it's actually pretty good. He's got a really good band.
Well, I saw him.
And they do Panama and all that kind of stuff.
We always need one of these friends. I had this guy, Scott Schmidt, Schmitty. He was one of those guys who just had the weird sense of adventure. So he calls me one day. He's like, hey, David Lee Roth is playing in Buffalo. You want to go? I'm like, oh, great. We're, like, tooling out to Buffalo. I'm thinking, this thing's probably sold out.
Was that the Skyscraper or the other one?
The first tour.
First one.
And I saw him in Rochester, too. And think about that band, freaking Billy Sheehan, Steve
right.
Vai.
Oh, yeah, man. That was a kick-ass band.
So we go out there, though, but Schmitty's always like that. I've always found out a little trick. If you ever, and you want to just, maybe you're wasting your time, maybe not, but if you go to, like, Darien Lake or Seaman, yeah. Go up. And ask, like, wait till the last minute and ask if there's been any cancellations. Because corporations will buy seats up front. And they'll wait, as people might not show. So we drive to Buffalo, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be sold out. We got second row seats.
Wow. Damn.
Which is interesting, because I'm thinking, like, at the War Memorial, they wouldn't have seating or anything. You know, you stood.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Except, like, I remember, like, I almost got crushed. That was my story on the radio show I never finished when I said I almost died at Iron Maiden. So we're all into it. It's Power Slave. We got there at 4:30. We go up. We're up front. It was brutal. We're talking.
I'll bet. right up your
I remember butt, right? My friends made signs because there were all these, like, nicknames, like Conan the Librarian or Elmo. They just went somewhere. And then I'm going, okay, it's like when Dave Murray's doing his guitar solo, I am, like, dripping. And all I remember when he hits the Star Spangled Banner, everything goes black.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, I'm thinking Who concert in Riverfront Stadium. If I drop here, I'm doomed.
Right?
So I'm, like, almost, like, getting by. And I'm, like, completely, I go, I stumble out and, like, drink half a gallon of water from the fountain. And I watch, like, back a little ways. Then I notice my friends staggering out looking like dead rats.
Oh, man, I can't do that. I can't be surrounded like that. It's too stressful.
No, I got to the point, you know, we were young and dumb. And I got to the point, and I remember, like, one Rush tour, I think it was Hold Your Fire. Getty was saying, you know, people were pushing. Yeah. But I just like to get a seat.
Yeah, after a while, you just want to sit down.
You know, but those are the days.
But everybody gets up, and then you're forced to get up.
Yeah, at least they're sitting. I got my foot stuck in a chair, took a scorpion, and all these burnout heads.
I'm not so sure I would admit to that.
No, I just said the story. I'll never forget. Because then what's happening, you imagine YouTube, I'd be a sensation, and these burnouts put their Coke spoons down their bong. This dude's stuck in a chair.
National news.
Help me. But this is supposedly our Easter and Dingus Day show. You know, Polsky Chada has those really cool Easter party.
Oh, do they?
Parties, yeah.
That's a great place.
Oh, I love it. I think they're having it actually, though, on the 6th.
You ever have their potato pancakes, man? They're freaking huge.
The gargantuan. I would go, oh, yeah, you get the thing in the pan. I always go, and then I would go to Dombrowski's because I like about both of these places. There's a little different. Like, you can get all these different flavor sausages and everything.
Ooh, nice.
I think Dombrowski's has got like 32 different ones sometimes.
Wow.
And it's on Hudson.
Dombrowski's.
Just go. If you go on Hudson, you'd see it almost where the football stadium is.
Oh, okay. All right. So what is the deal with Dingus Day? Is there a story behind it? I mean, I know nothing about it.
I just know when I had a job in Orchard Park one year and they had the Dingus Day parade, we had to go all the way around.
Wow.
It's a Polish thing. I don't know.
I know that, but I don't know.
I always thought Dingus meant mask for some reason. But
I always thought
it
meant a dumbass or something. Dupayash.
we'll research and have it on again. But what if you, like, if you have any Easter traditions growing up or anything?
Just the eggs. We used to go to Franklin. They used to have the Easter egg hunt at Ben Franklin on the grounds. And we'd do that, or at the playground, Carter Playground. We'd do that and, color the eggs, and we'd make that stuff at home. But other than that, just the usual stuff, go to church, you know.
My dad, like, he was a master of hiding that Easter basket. You know, then I got yelled at by one of my friends because I thought of this idea for their daughter. She used to try to set traps for the Easter bunny. So what I said was, get some ketchup and put it on the ground by the trap.
I set a bear trap out for the Easter bunny.
But I remember I was terrified because I remember the first time at Eastview Mall, the Easter Bunny appeared.
Oh, no.
And I freaked. My dad took me dust down there, me and my friends. I couldn't do it. I think that's why I've been putting the terrifying Easter Bunny pictures up online this week.
I wonder how how that image got associated with Easter.
Oh, it's Astara, the old pagan festival. Bunny is like a sort of fertility symbol.
That makes sense.
Do I have to spell it out for you?
No. Thump, thump, thump. Ah,
but
more bunnies.
I remember like one time I was in first grade, and we had Sister Conchetta, and she read a poem about Christ, and then she read a poem about the Easter Bunny, and she asked, which poem do you like better? And most of the people like the Easter Bunny poem.
Yeah.
And she freaked out. She got really mad.
Yeah, well.
And my view on that, though, is, okay, look, you're in first grade, okay?
I know. How heavy of a subject can you wrap your head around in first grade?
And that's what got me about it. Then actually one of the priests who had Father Daly, he liked to tell jokes and stuff during Mass. And he did during, I remember like my teacher, Sister Mary, who actually she's one of those types, once you got to know her, you really liked her, but she's really intimidating.
Right.
She flipped out. She was like super mad.
Yeah, well, there's always the secular versus the sacred, I mean, for Christmas and Easter. And I know some churches, they don't even call it Easter. They call it, like, Resurrection Day or something like that. You know,
not Resurrection Man, I hope.
No.
Because Resurrection Men were the guys who robbed graves in England to give bodies. No.
But, I mean, I think, you know, it's always good to know the true meaning of these things. I mean, I think secular days or reasons for celebrating probably just happened alongside the religious. Oh, like, you know, you're celebrating, so you have a village party or something, and everybody gets together. And then I think eventually that the religious part got sort of pushed to the background. And all of a sudden it became about Easter eggs and kids and candy.
Well, I had the one.
Those stupid candy makers.
So I had the one. Oh, Andy's on Hudson when I was a kid. And they had those huge sugar eggs with the seeds in them.
I worked there briefly in high school. Or, like, probably ninth grade.
Did they do the one? Because my mom worked at Fanny Farmer, and she loved those mint things with the chocolate in them.
Oh, me too.
She loved it, but she said what they would do is, you know, they get you give you as much free chocolate as you want. So by a couple weeks, she was sick of it.
Yeah.
Some wise-ass teenager like it was. I wonder if I could work at a brewery.
Yeah. Nice.
But I had the one this week where there was a woman came up to me, and she asked me if I wanted a Bible. And I'm like, no, I've read all these different texts and everything, like the W.C. Fields thing. I'm looking for loopholes. And so you know, she's polite, but she's like, you want to come to church with me? You remember Easter and everything?
Wow.
And I thought about, you know, that for a minute, because I do see sometimes online, I think a lot of people are just, like, really nasty about, like, religion and everything else. Well, nasty about a lot of things.
It's just taken such a back seat to everything, and they're trying so hard to get people more involved. After a while, they start, you know... It's like they're trying to recruit people, basically, and it almost becomes overkill.
I mean, even they have drummers at church sometimes.
Yeah. even so. Stand up, sit down, stand up, kneel.
Yeah, but the other drummers there and everything playing, so that'll bring them in.
I enjoy playing Christian music, even though sometimes I think it's the writing of it, it's all kind of basic, but it's all very... It's nice to sing the praises. I mean, you gotta get your religion somewhere. And I think it's important, as long as you have it.
You know, and that's what I thought. I mean, the woman was polite to me. I wasn't going to be nasty. I was worrying. She was sort of on a private place where she was, that they were going to, like, take her away or something. Because she was bothering people. But, I mean, she wasn't crazy and nuts about it, or like Aunt Esther and me hitting me with a purse.
Right.
You heathen.
I mean, I've always thought... that religion is strictly or basically a series of rules to live by. It doesn't matter if it's the Quran or it's the Bible or it's the whatever it is. It's basically a guide path to how to live and be harmonious and be at peace. So, I mean, if you just look at it that way, any religion will work.
Well,
unless you're sacrificing goats or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not go that far. But I also think, like, I am a big you-do-you person like that, and my faith or lack thereof would be my business. And I know, like, some places, some different religious sects, you're supposed to try to recruit people.
Yeah, but I've always – one of my old jokes is, like, you know, at the point of, like, what religion is the religion? And it kind of goes back to when you were a kid, you know, my dad can beat up your guy. It's like, my God can beat up your God, you know? It's
here
like
we go down the rabbit hole of me with stuff you might want to watch. Where Rowan Atkinson plays the devil in a sketch.
Yeah.
And he's greeting people.
Oh, he's funny.
And he goes, like, the first thing, okay, Christians, the Jews are right.
Yeah.
But then the funniest one is he gets down the line. It's like, atheists, you must feel like right twits right now.
Yeah, he's really funny.
And that's like, but that's the way it is. And I think it's all basically trying to, like, I know, like, I could say reporting back from being dead 3 years ago. I can't really report. Friends of mine are like, what'd you see? I can't really report back much. I like to joke about, well, I saw, you know, John Bonham lining up there with, Steve Marriott, and I was looking forward to the show.
Yeah.
I was wondering, okay, am I up or down? But, yeah. You know, it was weird. I felt like all of a sudden I wake up in an ambulance, and they're like, well, he's finally back. But it was, like, weird. It was dark. But it wasn't like I knew I was there.
Right. It had to be a strange experience.
And I had fun. I mean, well, I told, like, Carl with the isotopes and Meg, and I'm like, you know, don't look at this as a review of your show. And Carl remembered, well, you dropped over before we started. I was so anticipating.
Wow. Yeah, that had to be a weird one, man.
You ever have that sign up when you're playing? Don't get too excited that Grant's playing.
Well, I'm glad you're back. It's like, for sure.
And it's so weird because you really look at life. You look at, like, okay, there's more things in heaven and earth because it all, like, I had, like, a 5% survival chance. And
right.
Like my friend Rob and I, we have that, you ever notice I do have sort of a dark sense of humor. So we're talking, and he's like, man, that sucked. But can you imagine? Because I went for like a 3-hour walk before. He's like, man, can you imagine if you fell in the canal? It's like, oh, they dragged some homeless guy. Oh, shit.
Well, dying is right up there with skydiving as
and
far as you only get one shot.
Life and stuff and everything like that, too. But we don't know. And that's one of the things I try to tell people. Don't be like, I would be more like a skeptic or an agnostic than. Just purely not believe anything because I don't know how we got here. We could, like, spend the rest of the show. How did the universe start, Greg?
My God. Well, you know, who knows?
You'll drive yourself bananas going, well, there was nothing here, so where did it come from?
Try thinking about infinity. Just try to wrap your head around infinity, like never-ending time. You know, it's just too much. You can't do it.
Unless we have a time machine and then we...
Yeah.
But I like to think about that. I think we do have a lot of main character syndrome these days with social media. It's amazing. Like, some people, like, I don't want to associate with anymore, even because it just, it's become so nasty.
Yeah.
And you think, not a lot of this stuff we go on about doesn't matter. And our lives are our lives. Yeah, they're important, I hope, to us, but we're a speck.
I mean, you know, you get a momentary gratification for venting and saying something, but then it comes, it circles back and always gets at you. You know, and it's like, I don't want a lot of my friends thinking I think this or that. I mean, I try to keep my social media stuff to music and joking and stuff. I mean, some things, if I really feel super strong about something, I'll make a one and off comment and that's it.
Well, that was one of my big things, like about Sgt. Pepper, where I was saying that's one of my least favorite Beatles albums.
What? You get a lot of flack.
You know, a couple of my friends have told me they've gotten sick of, like, some people on political extremes because they'll say something, they don't even know them, and they'll send them, like, these vicious messages.
Wow.
And I would say, get a life.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden, if you're not with the crowd, you're some sort of deviant. You know,
and I'm like one of those, too, where it's like, okay, I won't like you if you vote for so-and-so, such-and-such. You know, tough, don't like me, then it's a free country.
Right.
You know,
you know, I wanted to mention this on the podcast, or that.
Well, good, you're here, you can mention it.
Yeah, so I'll mention it now at my podcast.
No, save the eight. We kept our B material for that show.
That's right. That's right. But, I you and I both, we sort of collect a lot of stuff and albums and music and whatnot and little tchotchkes. But I've been going back and listening to older albums that I have probably haven't listened to in a long, long time. And Pablo Cruz and these different things. And, you know, I sit there and I go, man, this stuff was way better than I thought it was. And other ones aren't as good. But for the most part, you see the music, even though the style has passed, you listen to it and you go, holy crap, this is really good, and it's really well thought out, and it was different for its time, and you appreciate it more. Even though maybe when it was in, something else took over the fashion part of it, in vogue or whatever, but when you listen to it now, 10 or 15 years later, you're like, man, I don't understand why this didn't make it. You know?
No, that's a wrong word to use for us in a way, but I think we're more mature, too. Us, we've changed a bit, too. If we're, like, watching something or listening to something as kids, maybe we don't get the complexity
right.
of the music or, wow, this is, you know, it's over 3 minutes. I can't take this. And now,
right.
like,
yeah.
I pulled up my Armageddon album recently again. A lot of these songs are, like, 8 minutes. It's a supergroup with Keith Ralph, like, around 1975.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, you know, my old self, like in my teens, would be song Buzzard starts. Then I'll start singing till like 3 or 4 minutes in.
Right.
I'd be like, where is this?
Well, yeah, you had the whole classical rock thing, which I really, really liked a lot. Yes. And, you know, all those Renaissance. I'm a huge Renaissance fan because I love Annie Haslam's voice. But I saw them at Water Street. But, you know, I liked that stuff a lot. But then eventually I got passé and then. You know, but you had to really know what you were doing with that kind of music.
You had to
play your instrument.
Like, especially like early Genesis. Yep. I read Steve Howe's book recently and about all like the classical influences and everything else. And I always thought like Prague is something where like countries like, well, my wife left me, my dog died, my truck got a flat tire.
Right.
exploding. You know, Prague is like to challenge yourself. And
right. Yeah. I mean, you know, you had to really know your stuff. And, then it got too bombastic and almost too much.
That's what Steve Howe would talk about in his book, though, where like you go the other way where people think of the guys wearing the capes who were pretentious
right.
and everything else. But yeah. I think it goes back to like, I mean, I'll watch Star Trek now and I like it even more.
Yep.
And I finally got around to the alternative factor, the whole thing with Lazarus, because when you're a kid, you're like, what the heck are they doing?
Right.
Because they got the good cheesy special effects where they like got a little twirly nebula.
Yeah.
And then you figure out they're two different guys.
Oh, yeah, right. I love Star Trek.
I do, but I love it even more now. And I think partly it's cool because, yeah, they have like touched all these up so they even look even better.
You have to get past the special effects thing. Like, I say that a lot about a lot of older shows, like the George Reeves Superman. You have to get past that, oh, cheesy effects. I mean, you know, the writing was pretty good, You know, and the, they tackled some dramatic things, if you think about it, like Star Trek II, you know, prejudice and, you know, alienation, and Superman had voting fraud and counterfeiting, and, you know, who's into that stuff when you're 12?
And I also, you know? Like, they didn't hit you over the head with it, though. It didn't have, like, a big message. It was a message, but it had you thinking.
Right.
Which I really liked.
Yes. You just wanted him to beat the bad guy. That was all you knew.
You know, when you're a kid, it's like one thing, and then it's another when you're, you know, you can appreciate this more. But, I mean, the stories, and I think possibly, I love the old effects because I love that idea of, we don't have, like, I can't just go into a computer. I have to make it up.
Right.
And do that. But also, I think you focused on the story first.
Yep. You're right. You had to tell a good story, and the rest of it was ancillary.
And you remember how to save, like, money because, like, Shatner, we're going to film White Comanche. Let's just film it on the truck set afterwards.
Right.
It's a legendary movie. Yeah, Shatner just turned like 93 now.
Wow.
What I and my like about him is it's, you know, bless him that at that age he's still functional.
Yeah. You know, one thing about him and rest in peace, Adam West, they are two that I can think of, the only two actors who pretty much made a career out of self-effacing and kind of making fun of themselves. And it gets them through. And somehow they get it. They get that it was a, they run with it. You know what I mean? Okay, this is what people think. This is what I'm going to give them. And I don't know. I think that's cool. Instead of, oh, they don't take me seriously. I'm going to kill myself. You know, it's stupid. It's acting. It's showbiz.
I would love, unfortunately, I don't think they have it. Adam West's bio, where he, like, hosted a version of the Howdy Doody show in Hawaii.
Oh, God.
And there's pictures of him in there, but I've tried to find it. And they probably, you know, they probably just went over the tape or whatever.
Yeah.
Like they did with, like, the old Doctor Who's. Or, like, unfortunately, it seems, I still hope that somebody's kid has footage we the pro wrestling show we had here in the 70s.
Yep.
Because it was cheap and everything, but then they would just, you know, they didn't realize now what a gold mine that would be.
Right. I remember being on the Jerry Carr Channel 13 Mickey Mouse Club. It was like we were the Cub Scout. It was a Cub Scout den, but we were on the show. I don't even know how we got it. We just went on, and I was fascinated by the studio and all that stuff. But I'd love to be able to see that now if we only had VCRs back then, you know.
All right. We both, I think, had friends or family on Bowling for Dollars.
And Skipper Sam and all that stuff. Yeah, Bowling for Dollars, yep.
Oh, but I remember, like, Jerry Carr was quite diverse because he was, like, Gregory the Gravewalker,
right?
I think.
And Chiller. And
he did, there was a short-lived one. He was the Phantom of the Theater. It was on Fox. All I ever saw was Godzilla versus Megalon on it. And it showed he was, like, he dressed in green, the green on. There's, like, a King Kong poster.
Yeah. I mean, they were pretty inventive. I mean, they were doing the, he had no face and all that kind of stuff. And that stuff is cool, man. I mean, for local TV to tackle that stuff is pretty interesting.
And it's also, like, for me and being a kid, you know, then it was a little different. I'm like, haha, this stuff's funny now. I was terrified.
Right.
Like, Kolchak the Night Stalker, it's like, now, there's the zipper in the back.
Right, yeah.
But then I was, like, hiding and horrified. And I remember there's one I've talked about, like, and I would love if they had footage from Gregory the Gravewalker's opening.
Right.
Because it was cool. Like, and I wonder if they filmed it at Mount Hope or.
Oh, I don't know.
It actually looks like Holy Sepulchre to me.
Well, they had, like, that dungeon set.
Yeah.
But
the thing was, there was one called Sound of Horror. I take it they did public domain because it popped up on one of my 50 movie discs.
Oh, really?
It's a really cool plot where it's about this invisible dinosaur in a cave. So all you see are the footprints.
Oh, wow.
But it's offing people. I was terrified.
Yeah.
Then, like, when they get him at the end, they sort of show he looks like sort of a stegosaurus. Okay, looks like a guy in a suit trying to get stegosaurus.
You know, it was a really scary movie to me. I'm going to have to watch it again. Pitch Black. Have you ever seen that with Vin Diesel?
Vin Diesel?
That movie is scary because you don't see much. And they went back to that old style of the fear is what's the frightening thing. It's not so much what you're seeing, it's what you're not seeing. And see, to me, that's true horror. I mean, fear is what makes you scared. It's not so much monsters and things, it's fear of monsters. Am I making myself clear? Or am I being opaque?
No, it's like Halloween. It's like the music. We were talking about this on Wednesday, like about the music. Okay, like you would say, you could say like with the kind of they use like for psycho, you know, the scary. But I would love to do is instead of doing that, like do a plastic scene like a Disney scene, then do the scary music like when a rabbit comes out.
Yeah, that would be great. Pretty funny.
But that's what it is. I've told this story before. That one year, my parents went out to dinner, and my relatives lived in Avon, and we're out there. My grandma was watching us. Me and my cousin Sharon watched The Exorcist, of course.
God. That scared the crap out of me.
I laughed. I thought it was hilarious. And I actually thought, like, it was a comedy. But the thing was, it was like a windy October night. We thought somebody was outside.
Oh, yeah.
Now, okay, if this was a horror movie or, like, something, you know, the next day they would have found footprints. But it was like us, but we were terrified. And, like, we were so glad when they got home.
Right. I had a friend of mine do that to me once when I was a kid. He hung out. He came to the side of my house, and he had a flashlight with some weird, scary mask, and he stuck his face in the window, and I almost freaked out for a minute, and I realized it was him.
The good old devil mask or whatever.
Yeah, it's creepy, man. Scary.
But that's all, you know, it's like, I don't know. What are you playing now this month? Because it seems like the time is going.
Well, I was at B-Side Friday. We had a great time with the Brian Lindsay Band. It's always fun over there. I mean, they treat us so, so well over there. Not too much going on. I'm trying to think here. Let's check the old calendar here.
She played the day before you.
I do have, I'm at Murph's on the 13th of April. And I'm at the B-Side again on the 20th of April. And then I will be hosting or helping host the Nate's Open Jam there at Murph's on the 24th of April. So I'll be the house drummer for that one.
So it's a light month, basically, for you.
Yeah.
And we do have, I'll get the date right this time, Primetime Funk playing a Tower of Power set on April 20th, ha.
Yeah.
April 20th at the Theater of Innovation Square.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to try to make that one. Can you still get tickets?
When I looked, it was kind of weird because, like, the front was filled. You know, if you go to get tickets, they have the little dots and everything. It's like a lot of people like the balcony. Maybe they want to throw stuff. It was, like, the front. But, I mean, that's, so you just go. It might be sold out. You never know. But
I got to try to get – I wanted to get Chris Duarte tickets at Abilene. It's coming up next week, I think. I have to
– Adriana's playing on the 4th. I think it's playing on the 3rd.
Yeah, I know. I got to get moving on that.
I don't know. I just get to the point sometimes. Mm-hmm. Trying to get me out of the house these days is sort of tough.
Right. Well, I know how I am. I get home. If I don't stay in motion and I go home, that's it. I'm in for the night, you know.
Oh, and that's the thing we have to talk about, too, because you've been working your way through it. Your reaction to the Harryhausen movies.
Oh, my God. They are so good. I listened to a lot of the commentaries, and so interesting how he does all that stuff. And Harryhausen was he wanted to make sure he was on set all the time, and the armatures and all these different things, and how the actors have to, you know, look in a certain direction, and the, you know, how they have to be directed and all that stuff, which prompted me to go watch Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow again. And I watched some special features on that. I mean, that movie is almost all CGI. I mean, almost every scene is like very few props, maybe a desk or something, but I mean, it was just like you're looking at nothing and you have to imagine. I mean, to me, that's really acting when you have to pretend there's something there. And, you know, I find that extremely interesting and challenging.
I don't think people knew what to make of that movie, too. I love it.
I love it.
For some weird reason, it's not a holiday movie, but it's got that feel of like the old-time serials.
Well, that's what they were doing, yeah.
But I don't think people just got it for some reason.
That started out, if you listen to the commentaries, the Sky Captain, that started out as a six-minute thing that the guy made himself, Carey, whatever his name was, and he got a producer, and the producer did a commentary. So the producer is talking about all the stuff that they went through. A couple of 3 years, getting funding, doing this, doing that. I mean, anybody that thinks making a movie is simple, think again.
I've heard in, like, one of my little not guilty pleasures, but eclectic choices for Easter's Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter.
Never saw that.
I'll let you borrow it.
Yeah.
But I actually had, okay, I watched it twice at, I went to
kind of makes sense.
Dryden. And it's actually, it's very good. And I guess the director said they were putting it on this double bill with the Passion of the Christ in this area.
Whoa.
But hearing about, like, outlaw filmmaking, where he showed up, and actually one of the actors was he must have enjoyed our local beverages beforehand, because he was sort of visibly intoxicated. But I mean, I love stuff like that. It's like, I saw Jim Dandy when he fell off the stage. I didn't go listen to Blackout Kirkus at all. But he talked about they shot on weekends for like 2 years.
Wow.
Because.
Wow.
And people are like, it's actually a reverential movie in a lot of ways.
Well, it's kind of a good allegory. I mean, the devil is sort of a vampire. You know, and I mean, it's kind of, I can see that. I mean, vampires are somewhat evil. So, I mean, if you're going to have anybody fight them, it probably should be Christ.
Well, not only that, but, it, you know, who aligns with them? El Santo, the masked wrestler, the saint. So you know it's cool. But yeah. I was going to say, too, did you get to the color versions of Earth vs. Flying Saucers?
And No.
I think they look awesome. Well, you'll have to tell us next time.
Yeah, I watched the one of... the color version of the, I can't think of it now. The one with the Navy and the sub and stuff. What's the one about the Navy?
The giant octopus.
The octopus, yeah. It came from beneath the sea. I watched that one. That was really good. But I have to finish those, yeah. I watched some of the Sinbad, and I listened to some of the commentaries on the Sinbad movies. They're very interesting.
But also the weird trivia on there, we have two Doctors Who in those movies.
Yeah.
Patrick Troughton, and then we have Don Baker is the sort of evil guy.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Patrick Troughton is sort of the daft wizard.
Huh. That's cool. See, I didn't know that. I learn things every week, folks.
Yes, we always learn. Like,
so can you.
Anything we can talk about, we touched Easter, Dingus Day. What the heck are you talking about for April Fool's Day?
I don't know. Maybe we won't have a show. Fooled you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like one of my weird pet peeves. Maybe it's because it's leap year. I don't like when Easter is so close to St. Patrick's Day. Can't do anything about it.
Right.
There's something about it. I like it in April. It's weird. I have that. It's like, for me, there's a sameness to it. There's also a sense of it's spring, new beginning.
Right. Did you ever really notice? It seems to me, I mean, kind of today notwithstanding, because it's not very pleasant outside, but Good Friday is always dark. And sometimes it starts out nice, and after 12, it gets lousy. And I can't help but think sometimes in the calendar and the way the universe is spinning around, who knows, you know? Is it an accident or is it, you know, and then usually Easter Sunday is a lot more sunny and joyous.
Well, it's Rochester, so it's
right.
Sunny and joyous for us here. I saw a couple daffodils.
Yeah, that's good. Well, yeah, the flowers don't know.
You know, and I'll end that with what Tom Baker said in The Day of the Doctor. Who knows? Who knows?
Not me.
No. The coolest statement you've ever said on the news of the show.
I know nothing.
But we've got some interesting stuff coming up in April, which will be surprises, I guess.
Yeah, lots of guests. We got them.
Stop the cheering. We could do these. We only do those for you because we could do this show on our own. We talked for 2 hours on Wednesday.
That's right.
So there, after I found the studio, which took a little bit. But it's been fun as always, and happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Happy Dingus Day. And you know what I have? Okay, doing the swerve thing about, okay, it's Easter, April Fool's Day. I could have dragged out a polka song for Dingus Day, but get the show pulled off.
I forgot. I got a polka album I should have brought.
But I have, Dr. Kielbasa. He's awesome. There's a guy. There's a band named Dr. Kielbasa.
Nice. I love it.
But I have... You may never have heard of this one, but it's a song by Anonymous Willpower, Pumpkin Love, too.
Oh, yeah.
And were you in the video?
I might have been on that one. I don't know. We'll see.
I remember because Levon's on this. We got to get him back.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, we got Carla Kutz. We got, who else we got coming on?
Yeah, hopefully Adriana. And then Adriana Grande, too, as you said.
Yeah. And I think we got a couple of special guests that we're not supposed to talk about, so we're not going to talk about it. So we're not going to tell you.
I know. Paul McCartney's weird that way. He's like, I don't want
people
to come to the studio.
I'm still working on it.
But I remember this.
I'm going to get Rin Tin Tin.
This is a really good video if you can find it, too. But, well, Pumpkin Love, I guess, you know, my pumpkin from Halloween's still alive, so I'll put the bunny ears on it.
Wow.
Give it some love.
There you go.
Still is. It's solid. I got to say that. That was a Wegmans pumpkin.
Nice.
And have you got your Eclipse glasses?
Yeah, we got them. I got a shirt, too.
Okay.
And I'm playing at House of Guitars on Eclipse Day with Mason Tyler, I guess, at 1 o'clock. We'll see how that goes.
Go on if you want. I have to admit, I've had some invitations. I'm saying, I complain driving to the show. I'm not going to drive around the day.
My girlfriend was wearing a shirt today that said, "Hello, Darkness, my old friend," which I thought was very clever for the Eclipse.
Cool. But I think you're going, okay, they're just dragging it out now. So let's
shut up, guys.
Listen to Pumpkin Love. See ya.
Eat your candy. See your dentist twice a year.